This is Universal Soul Love. This is Dr. Lana Love.
And David Love.
How are you?
Welcome to the show today. Today we're going to be talking about staying in your power. We're going to be talking about the transformational process of mind alchemy, working with our thoughts and our emotions and maintaining a high vibration, even when we have these daily tests and challenges of life, as we always all do.
I'm actually the one that really wanted to do this topic because it's so important. And in the work that I do with patients and in personal life, when you have conflict, everything goes sour. And I've got an adolescent at the moment, and as other mothers and fathers out there would know, they are tricky creatures, really tricky. So we've come up with the idea of transformational, alchemizing emotional techniques, a way of remaining, staying in your power, despite everything going wrong around you.
Right. Last week we talked about, one of these episodes, we talked about emotional endurance and, these aren't ideas that we came up with, but we're just speaking from our own experience and our own spiritual insights, as we always do.
And of course, our show is called Universal Soul Love, and we're all about unconditional love. But David, I guess in this show, we're going to explore not just theoretical ideas, we'll do a bit of that, but practical ideas, because it's all very well talking about unconditional love, but when you're in the moment telling your adolescent or your 10 or 11-year-old to clean up the room and they don't do it and they stare back and you start getting angry, where's the unconditional love?
That's right. And all the ancient mystical philosophy and Buddhist principles are not going to help. That's right. But they're very useful, but we've got to find techniques to sort of employ those our personal beliefs that we find empowering, like meditation, things like that, and carry them out in the moment, because we're always in the moment, and that's where our power is, and that's where our action takes place, and that's where everything takes place, right here in the moment. So what do we do when we're faced with these adversity? How do we overcome that adversity, or how do we maintain our inner balance? How do we do that? And that's what we want to talk about today.
So the way in which I'd like to look at this is I've actually drawn a mind map of this. I don't know for our viewers out there whether you ever use mind maps, but it's a great way of structuring your thoughts and the way in which you approach anything. So the first thing I think is you have to know what you want. And I think the value of unconditional love
is within us.
It's within us, and it's a higher value to aspire to than conditional love.
And it's also a choice, I believe, that you can choose to be angry or you can choose to be sad or hateful, and we all will at times, but we can always come back to, we can take that choice in the moment, we can come back to our center of power, and if that's unconditional love for us, then that's within us. Love is not outside of us per se. It's within us, and everything always starts with us, and it's our responsibility, and no one can take that away from us.
But David, why do we want unconditional love? Why not have conditional love? Because, you know, one argument would be that if someone isn't loving you enough, if they're not doing what you're asking time and time again, if they are, betraying you, not doing the right thing, perhaps it's not right to love them back. Perhaps they don't deserve it.
And this is why wars are created and conflicts continue. Response, you get the cause and effect. Somebody says something negative and you retaliate and it continues.
So is that your answer to why we need unconditional love?
I think that goes back to what do we want. And many of us say we want peace and love, but yet here we are in conflict. And this, of course, all starts with the person. It starts in the home with us. And so what do you want? Do you want peace and love? Is that a better vibration? Does it feel better? Or do we want to remain in conflict and in war?
So, David, are you saying that if you have conditional love, if you're only going to love someone if they love you back, are you saying that's not going to work?
No, I think love is just love. It's an energy, and I think it's a physics principle that love is never destroyed once it's created, and it's always there. And we can always come back to that. It's out there when we create it, and it's within us. And those conditions always are going to be disruptive of that, and they're going to get in the way, and that's going to create the conflict. And
but so, should you love everybody unconditionally? Is that actually a good principle to apply to?
I think so. Let's look at it this way. If somebody gets angry at you, does that mean they no longer love you? Does that mean that love is now gone? Does that mean they've abandoned you and rejected you and hate is all that remains?
A lot of people would say yes. But then other people would say no.
But what we've been told by many of our, you know, sort of light worker friends and people who practice this, they say that if we are in a higher vibration, the presence of someone who's creating negativity and conflict, they have no choice over a period of time but to sort of become love themselves over a period of time and become that higher vibration that we are maintaining within ourselves.
Oh, okay. So what you're saying, David, is that having unconditional love has actually got a pretty good practical value, because you're actually going to affect other people and things are going to be more loving than if you have conditional love.
And also we can think more clearly. I mean, we have clarity when we're maintaining our stability, our emotional stability, and we can carry out our solution-based techniques and our problem-solving techniques. But like I said, I've been a problem solver my whole life as an investigator. And I know that when I'm thinking clearly and my emotions and my thoughts are in alignment and they're working together, I'm able to carry out these solutions without getting drawn into the other person's negativity.
Well, David, that's a really good point, actually. Really good point. Because, you know, unconditional love sounds fantastic and, you know, it's wonderful to aspire to, but it's hard sometimes to maintain.
Sure.
But what you're saying is that if you remain peaceful and loving, you're going to be thinking clearer and things will flow better.
Sure, because if you're becoming absorbed in the conflict and the other person's emotional turmoil, you're now part of that emotional turmoil and you're having your own inner conflict and you can't make good decisions. It's difficult to make
good decisions.
And
okay.
So you want to remain separate from that person's, because that's that person's problems and they're not yours. We are sovereign beings and we have control over our thoughts and feelings when we're mindful of it and we're in the present moment, we're mindful of our thoughts and feelings. Then we can do whatever we have to do in the moment, whether it's self-defense, for example, or whatever the crisis is in the moment, we can handle that crisis and be successful in overcoming that adversity when we have emotional stability within ourselves and we're still remaining in our unconditional love and our center of power.
Okay, well, that makes sense. But the other part that doesn't quite make sense, and maybe that's the reason why people struggle with this, me included, is I think that people feel that if someone's being nasty to them or disrespectful to them, if they get angry back, it's a sign that says stop. It's a sign that you're not going to put up with that.
That's true.
Whereas if you're just loving back, it's almost like, hey, you'll take anything.
No, because I think that self-love is about self-respect. And that means that you don't let people walk all over you. You don't let people abuse you. And you can respond with assertiveness. And you can respond with sort of a sense of dissatisfaction, your voice, if you want to call it anger, letting the person know that this is not okay and you're not accepting this. You still love them. It's not abandonment and rejection.
So you're actually saying that you should respond assertively, but with love rather than with anger.
Right. I need you to respect me and not swear at me, not hit me. If you do these things, I still love you, but I can't be with you. I may have to walk away for a while and come back until you're ready to respect me. But
okay, so that's a really good principle, and it's so hard to put into practice. And I know with my kids, you know, if they don't do what they're told, you can be loving the first time, loving the second time. By the third time, you start getting angry. But I guess the principle to keep in mind is that you can be assertive but loving. And that's just as, or that is more powerful.
The love is always there within you, and you can maintain that and still carry out whatever you need to do without getting absorbed into that emotional turmoil, and it can be effective that way. And it's difficult in, you know, your adolescents and your children or anyone else you work with or anything going on in the world or any relationships you have that are difficult. Those are your tests and challenges, and that's part of your personal growth and part of working on your own character is learning techniques, learning how to deal better with conflict, manage conflict in a more effective way.
So really, getting to the practical aspect of it, I think we need to talk about assertiveness. You can remain respectful towards yourself. You can remain loving towards others, but you can make sure that you are not hurt, and you can make sure that you carry out what you need to do. Okay, we're back after an electronic glitch.
We are.
So
we still got a good half hour to go, so we're going to keep going at this.
Resilience.
Resilience, that's right.
So we were talking about assertiveness, and assertiveness being the magic wand, the magic tool that allows you to give unconditional love to someone when there's an emotional outburst. Assertiveness versus aggression and hostility.
Hostility and all those words that we give negative meaning through that contain hatred and aspects of anger that we don't like. And we got to remember, we're managing ourselves. This isn't about the other person. This is about how we're responding to the situation, to the person that we're dealing with. This is all about us maintaining our emotional stability and our being the masters of the mind alchemy, self-mind masters. And
because you may be able to affect your external circumstances, or you might not.
That's
but
right.
The only thing you really have total control over is yourself.
And that's your inner self.
That's right.
And so, you know, we talk about, because I call myself a mystic, and I study universal laws, and a lot of it centers around law of correspondence, which means the world is your mirror, as above, so below. And so your outer world is a reflection of your inner state.
That's an interesting one.
And vice versa. And
that's actually quite deep.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people would say, if someone's coming at me and they're being hostile or not loving, how could that be a reflection of me?
Because it is in the moment, because that's the person that you're dealing with, and that's the situation that you're dealing with, and that's what is outside of you at the moment, and then that person's reacting to whatever you're doing. And so,
You could argue that it's a reflection of them, but my understanding of something like that is that we are like holograms. We contain all of the components of the universe.
And this is true of the other person that we're dealing with. We're also a reflection of them, as within, so without. So this is going both ways. It's like on earth as in heaven. It's happening on the spiritual plane. It's happening in the physical world. It's happening between people and relationships.
And maybe even if the other person is hostile and you are really loving, perhaps at least you can recognize that there have been times in your life when you've been hostile, and therefore that provides a way in which you can love them unconditionally, because even if you're loving in the moment, we've all had times when we've lost it.
Right. We have to not get carried away with the idea that this conflict or stressful situation that we're dealing with is the end all of our experience with this person or life or whatever it is. You know, this is just a moment, and we assume that we hope that there will be another moment after this where we can continue the relationship. So we look towards that, but we're dealing with it in the moment, and we want to know that we still love that person. And I think what you and I talked about, Lana, is about going back to that place of peace within ourselves and maybe reflecting on an experience with that person that was loving, so that it's a trigger for us, or a technique out, so that we can return to our center of unconditional love and power, so that we can manage our emotional stability and our thoughts. And
okay, so in order to really get unconditional love, first of all, you have to have the values. You have to have the values, understanding that we are connected to everything, We have to understand that we are totally responsible for ourselves.
Yeah.
We also have to understand that in remaining peaceful and loving, we can positively affect others. And we also have to get that we are a reflection of everything else. And even if you're not feeling that feeling in the moment, you have everything in the universe inside of you. You have all the molecules, you have all the emotions that everyone else in the world has.
The Christ consciousness, collective consciousness, the whole thing is within us. It is, we are the I am, each one of us. We are the co-creators of the universe. We are the all in all. We are whole individuals. And so we have, that is our inner power, that is our inner knowledge, that is our higher knowledge.
And all of that really allows us to do all of this. And then next, on the practical way of doing this would be, so we've talked about assertiveness, which we'll talk about a little bit later, but you also talked about meditation techniques or relaxation
techniques. Yeah, and these are things prior to, you know, the event or whatever event it is or whatever crisis it is that may come up. We have to do that on a daily basis and learn to meditate or do yoga.
It's so hard. I can never find enough time to meditate.
Practice, consistency, just doing it when you can. If you're at, you know, whatever it is that works for you, and there's so many techniques, there's so many self-help techniques. And
but in terms of actually doing it, I sometimes recommend to people, I've used this myself in my life, using David, very similar technique to helping people stop smoking. This is the technique of having a buddy. If someone wants to stop smoking, you usually get a buddy to stop smoking with you. If you want to go jogging, you usually get a buddy to go jogging with you. If you want to meditate, you take your partner or your girlfriend or your boyfriend and say, hey, let's do this together. And then you can keep each other, honest.
Right. So are we talking about community support groups? Or are we talking about going to the gym with people or exercising?
And having a buddy to do it with.
Or a therapist even, or whatever it is. That we're just talking about having a person that can support us emotionally.
That's right. Or having a buddy that can do something with you. So, you know, you come to a, you know, you have a
class.
New Year's resolution that you go to your yoga class once a week.
Martial arts, whatever it is, exercising.
Meditation once a day, and then you
singing.
Make sure. That's right.
Yeah, anything.
That's right.
Anything. Art.
Another thing that I use sometimes is using micro techniques. So, yes, meditation, you're supposed to do 20 minutes twice a day.
Well,
that's great.
Yeah, that's great.
However, on those days when that's not possible, which is more days than none, you can use the micro meditation.
Is that the 1 minute meditation where you can just close your eyes and count to 10 or
that's
whatever,
right.
Or go to your inner sanctuary, your pleasure spot, you know,
your
neutral zone or whatever that is where you can feel safe and secure, your safe haven within your mind, your
and you can
speech
do that
or your whatever.
Over even a few seconds. You just take time out.
Breathe.
You breathe. It's really good to have practice beforehand. To choose a place that you can imagine that really makes you feel good, like the beach or, a waterfall or a favorite garden. And then, you know, if you're having a stressful day, you've got no time to meditate, you take 5 seconds out, you imagine a lovely scene, you breathe in, you breathe out, and honestly, after a few seconds, actually in a better state.
And you can feel, you can visualize whatever scene it is, and you know, there's tapes for this, there's guided meditations to teach you these things, and I guess there's many ways of doing it.
Lots of ways, but the micro technique I think is a real good one. Another technique that you talked about today was wearing something to remind you to do this. You know, you can have a necklace with
your pink
heart. Yeah.
I have Seal of Solomon that I like, a little protection amulet that reminds me of...
To do this.
Know, yeah.
And this is really good also in times of conflict, you know, when your face is going red and you're fighting with someone, you reach for that necklace with that lovely, you know, quartz, rose quartz heart, and you think, uh-oh, time to ground
myself. Getting upset. You have to, this is about self-awareness and mindfulness and knowing who you are, and of course, a lot of this, I think we've talked about in the past, is about inner exploration and separating your thoughts and feelings from the influences outside of you, and knowing who you are, and it's about self-actualization, which takes a long time. You do have to get to know yourself and get in touch with your feelings.
It does, and some people are better at it than others, you know?
It took me a long time to really know who I am, to know what my values are, and to develop my integrity and really understand myself better. And then
what helps you better with personal insight? What can we tell our listeners that is the single thing that is most important in personal insight about your thoughts and your emotions?
I really think that I looked at my thoughts and feelings as an independent observer without putting judgment on them, and I love being self-critical. I looked at those things, and when I saw negative things in my mind, I said, that's not true. I know who I am, and I know my background, and I know what I've done, and I know my accomplishments and achievements. I feel good about myself. I would give myself those self-affirmations saying, you know, I am worthy, I am valuable, and I always tell people this to bring things up with me. And
The technique, though, what you did with that, which I think is really worth emphasizing, is being objective about your thoughts. And another idea, thoughts and emotions are not you.
No, they're not. They're separate from the self.
They are. That's a novel thought, isn't it?
It's not that novel, but I'm sure they have that in Buddhism in some way.
But most people don't think about that, and they don't teach this at school.
No, thoughts and feelings are independent things with their own consciousness, and many of those thoughts and feelings are not ours. Those thoughts and feelings actually belong to someone else, and when someone criticizes you, that's their opinion. If they say, you're fat, you're stupid, you know that's not true, because that's not your comment. That's an opinion coming from someone else. If you know yourself, in the moment when somebody's creating a conflict with you, you can say to yourself, I know that's not true because I know who I am.
Okay, so part of that is recognizing that the critical thoughts you have inside your head might be a reflection of what you read in magazines, for example, about, you know, women having to look a certain way, or recognizing the critical voices come from your childhood.
That's right. Yeah, they can come from so many different sources, and until we do that inner self-exploration, it's really difficult for us to know, with all of these outside influences, we're creating inner conflicts between the heart and the mind and emotion and intelligence and whatever way you want to put that. I think those are sort of our internal emotional conflicts. And so we need to find a way of looking at those things objectively when we hear things coming from outside of us. It's almost subliminal, and it gets into our subconscious mind, and it really creates turmoil for us because we don't even know that these things are affecting us this way many times, you know, magazines and radio and things like that. So
that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So the insight can take some time, but it's really worthwhile getting, and amazing to think that your thoughts and your feelings are not you.
And so when we build up that fortitude within ourselves, in the moment when we're faced with conflict, we're now prepared for it. We can respond to it without, if we need to do that assertively, or we do that in a loving way, or whatever solution we use in the moment to deal with a crisis, we can do that. We're now ready for it because we've got our techniques, we've got ourselves in order so that we know what to do, and we just need to remind ourselves and be self-aware enough to carry it out in the moment.
That's right. So,
And also,
another thing I think is the realization that you will die.
And, oh, God. You say that with an ominous voice.
Seems pretty, okay. The realization that we're going to die.
I had someone on Facebook not too long ago say to me, we were talking about the truth will set you free, because it was something I heard from, it was just an insight I had. It was sort of a synchronicity, and I said that to this person. He goes, the truth has set me free, no death. The craziest thing.
So why do I say that? Because death, the realization that we're going to die, makes us aware of the fact that ultimately everything passes. And
it's temporary.
It's temporary.
Impermanent.
So, that's right. And so if you're in a bad situation, it's going to pass as well.
Everything is change. Everything is in constant change. Change is, we can rely on change in every moment and in everything.
And far from being aware of your own death being negative. In Buddhism, they actually suggest this as a really good way of getting a firm perspective on life. They even suggest graveyard meditation, not in a negative way, but to get rid of the idea that it all matters so much.
We call it transition. Many people call it transition because it's not about death is not about physical death of the body. It's about the reawakening of the soul. And I know this from spiritualism, that this is very true, continuity of life. And I know that once you accept this transition and you accept your immortal soul and your mortality, then you can move on and enjoy life and really live life rather than being in fear. Because once you accept your immortality, your eternal soul, you'll no longer fear anything in life because death is our biggest fear generally. And once we've gotten beyond that, then we can really live life to the fullest and we can be effective in life and be successful. And I think it's really hard to, you know, move between love and fear, those two basic emotions, until we've gotten accepted physical death, mortality,
so
and eternal life.
So I think there's two concepts here, and it's sort of paradoxical. So one is that we will die, and so what happens in this world doesn't matter so much, and so we don't have to get so upset about it. But secondly, we only die in the body. Our spirit continues. And that's kind of nice. It's nice to be connected to eternity.
And some people don't believe this. I do take this on faith, and I think it's really important with any spiritual belief that this is it's a really important component, and this is what really did it for me. And I do encourage this. You don't have to, of course. No one has to accept anything I say, but I do see death as one of our greatest teachers and a really important spiritual belief for myself. No matter what faith or religion or philosophical belief or ideology you take on, this one is a big one. The power of choice is a big one, and personal responsibility is another big one for me with my personal beliefs. They've all been really useful to me. And it's about what's useful to you and what works for you in order to make you successful in whatever it is you want to do in life.
So lots of really important concepts, all of which bundled together, give us more emotional stability. Really important. And our show today is all on staying in your power and on transforming emotions. Now let's talk a little bit more about transforming your own emotions. So we talked about how not to get upset when someone else is angry with you, and we talked about how to be assertive. Well, actually, maybe we haven't talked enough. Let's talk a little bit about assertiveness. Assertiveness is when you respect yourself, you respect the other person, you don't, though, allow someone else to hurt you, but you don't get angry.
You don't have to accept abuse or tolerate oppression or injustice or unfairness.
So that's very different to being aggressive or being passive. So let's just demonstrate that.
These are natural rights. We have birthrights.
Absolutely. So let's just demonstrate unconditional love with assertiveness versus being a passive doormat and being aggressive. So what we're going to do is, David wasn't expecting this, so what we're going to do is we're going to do a little bit of a skit here, okay? So we're going to first of all do a skit with someone being a doormat and not being not standing up for their rights. All right, so let's see now. Say I'm going to come up to you and I'm going to ask you whether I can borrow your car keys.
Lena,
you're going to be a doormat here.
Okay. Lena, I'd like to let you use the car right now. I'd be perfectly happy to, but I'm on my way to a meeting.
No, I really need these keys. It's absolutely essential. Thank you.
No, Lena.
Thank you. That's great. No. Look. This is more important.
Okay. What is the catch you need to do?
No, you're being assertive.
I am. I'm being assertive and asking you what it is you need to do.
So you've just gone from being passive and not being in your power to suddenly becoming empowered. Wow. What do I need to do? I need to urgently go and buy a few things.
Really, and how urgent is this? Because I really need to get to work and make money, and I'm just asking quickly. I need to leave in about 5 minutes. And if this is a medical necessity or emergency, maybe I can quickly take a taxi, but otherwise, if this is just for you to go get something at McDonald's, you know, I really need to get to work.
Oh, okay.
So I want to hear what you have to say real quickly, and I'll make a decision.
Okay, well, in that case, that's okay. I'll have to do it another time.
Now, what if the person continued to be resistant, as people are? You know, I need the car now. You're going to give it to me.
That would be aggressive.
Yeah. So people will be aggressive. They might not be negotiable, and you might not have the opportunity to be diplomatic and negotiable in situations.
But what we're seeing it's actually possible to keep being assertive and not be aggressive and maintain the relationship with that person, maintain a sense of love. And that would mean that when you look at me, if you think that I'm being unreasonable, you try to remember other times when things have been good, and you try to keep an all-round total view of the person,
right,
without thinking that I'm selfish.
No, this is about understanding the other person's needs, because although everything starts within us and everything about us, it's also about the other person, paradoxically. So when I know myself, it gives me a better chance to understand the other person, where they're coming from. So I want to know, this is about fairness. If we share the car, then obviously I have a duty to you and a responsibility to you. And so you always start with kindness, I believe. You always start with diplomacy and negotiation.
So that was a really good practical demonstration of how you can go from passive to assertive, and you didn't really become aggressive. But you talked about your needs, and then you asked me about my needs. And that's how you remain balanced with all of this, and hopefully stay loving towards someone else.
And you're keeping calm within yourself. You're keeping that inner peace, even if the person's saying, I got to go. I need the keys. I got to go. No, you don't. You need to stand there, and you need to explain to me why you need the keys. And tell me if this is an emergency, and we'll figure something out if I have the time. I mean, sometimes we have to make quick decisions, and that means doing what you need to do. Everything is situational and circumstantial.
It takes a lot of patience.
And it takes clarity. It takes emotional stability and clarity, and you've got to know how to make the decisions.
Mm.
And you may be faced with somebody who's very hostile and aggressive, and you may have to, there's a level of escalation, and we don't want it to escalate, first of all. So you want to respond to things appropriately. If somebody's coming at you with a knife, all bets are off. Now you're going to defend yourself in any means necessary.
Well, actually, I did hear of someone who said that if you really love someone and someone puts a knife into you, you should gently take the knife out, you should wipe the blood off, apologize, and give the knife back. Maybe that's unconditional love.
I heard that. Yes, we heard that. And that is a choice. You can do that. I think he was maybe just explaining that. We do have the ability to do that if we're still alive.
Are you saying that's a little bit too far?
Yeah, I'm not quite that enlightened. I come from a background where, it's okay to defend yourself in a life-threatening situation. That's the fight or flight. That's when your instinct kicks in. That's the fight or flight response. But... thinking very practically here, and leaving out the enlightened philosophy.
Let's talk about your inner emotions. How can you stay in your power when it's your emotions that are letting you down?
Well, we talk about being happy. They say we want to pursue happiness, and we want to do, but I don't think it's about happiness, and all emotions are internal feelings. They come from within us. The happiness and love are not necessarily outside of us, although we can do the things we enjoy and that bring us joy and bring us happiness, but that's a feeling within us. So we always have that, and we can always be happy in any circumstance.
You know, David, I've heard some people say that happiness is actually not so much an emotion as a condition, or maybe love is not so much an emotion but a condition. That's an interesting way of looking at it.
But if we say condition, is that based on our circumstances? If things aren't the way we want them, does that mean we won't be happy?
Well, I'd like to think that happiness and love is a state of being rather than a condition. A state of being that actually is not changeable.
It is a state of mind, isn't it? And it will be sort of changeable. I don't think we're always going to be happy, but we can always come back to that place of unconditional love, that center of power that we have for ourselves. And we need to realize that love is the highest vibration. And so,
yeah, it makes sense to be happy. It sucks to be down. It sucks to be angry.
So we can strive for that higher vibration. We can try to maintain that as much as possible. And it's like the law of polarity, you know, the extremes. And so the pendulum swings between the extremes of love and hate and anger and those emotions. And we want to minimize those swings, almost like lithium, right? We want to try to minimize the extremes. But they say in mysticism, you want to rise above the pendulum. You actually want to sit on top and look down at everything as the master of your emotions.
Oh, wow. I love that.
And watch everything. And sort of that's where you're sort of taking the highest level. You're not even swinging.
Rising above the pendulum. So let's see if I've got that right. So what you're saying is that it's not that we're striving to be in the middle, well-balanced, not swinging from side to side. You're saying you can actually rise above the whole pendulum thing.
Well, I guess that's a theory. I've done that at times.
That would go along with the idea that we are not our emotions or our thoughts, that we are spirits. The emotions and thoughts are actually something different. We're actually above all of that.
I guess you almost get to that place where of emptiness, where you're almost not even there, and that's that no self, I think, that Buddha talked about. And so that we realize that all of our beliefs and values and things aren't quite real. They're almost an illusion. That's why I often talk about non-belief, because the same as no self, because beliefs are just strongly held opinions often. Even facts are subject to interpretation. I know this from doing criminal defense. Everybody's got their own ideas about the world, and they interpret things their own way through colored lenses, and we see what we see, and not necessarily the truth. Even the most basic facts, I don't know that that is the capital T truth.
Well, that's what a lot of people will say. A lot of, you know, great spiritual masters will say there is no truth.
There are your personal truths, for sure, and there's certainly things that are, there's a sun in the sky. What color is it? That's also an interpretation of the variation of the color of the sun and the sky and everything, and the hardness and softness of things. These are all the law of polarity. These are all labels, and we give meaning to the world.
That's right. You know, there's a great, lovely Buddhist saying about that illustrates this, about how things are perceived so differently depending on who you are, and no one's right and no one's wrong.
No good guys and no bad guys, good and bad.
Have you heard about the metaphor of, I think it's five blind men, and they were asked what a particular animal looked like. And one blind man was an elephant. One blind man was standing close to an elephant's trunk, and he said, well, this animal is very long and like a tube. The other blind man was standing close to the elephant's leg, and he said, well, this animal is very sort of round and, you know, very wrinkled skin. The other blind man was standing next to the ear, and he described how the elephant was sort of quite flappy with the skin, and etc., etc. So depending on where you were, you have a different perception. Really important point.
Just like when I did my criminal cases, I'd have five witnesses trying to describe a suspect. And, I would take the witness statement or the victim statement, and everyone would have a different perspective and a different interpretation on the height, the skin color, hair, clothing, because sometimes things happen in a split second. The robbery might happen in a split second. Somebody might get killed, and nobody's really sure what they saw. They might say they're sure. And, you know, when things happen in the second, you make that split decision. In criminal cases, these things, these situations are decided by, the outcome is decided by a jury much later over a longer period of time. So who knows? I've learned this over 20 years, and I've learned that attorneys can be very persuasive in their arguments, and people can often be easily swayed by professional opinion and by experts and credentials. And we just have to know that our perception of the world is our opinion, and the situations that we perceive are just the way we perceive them. That's part of our power. Interpretation is part of our power. Giving meaning to the world is one of our internal powers.
You know, I'd like to tell you about an amazing course that I went to over a weekend. And this course was all about seeing the world through other people's eyes as well as yours, seeing that the meaning that we give to life is transient, and our judgments and everything goes into it. And during this weekend, what happened was we stripped back all our judgments, all our preconceived opinions about everything. We started taking responsibility for our lives. And at the end of the weekend, everyone was so transformed. There was such a connection. There was such a sense of love. And there was a sense that there was absolutely no meaning to life. And I mean this in a positive, not a negative way. No actual meaning to life. And that meant that you had this huge potential for you to give any meaning you wanted, to do anything you want to life, because it's all up to us.
That's right, because when we talk about consciousness and we say no self, there's emptiness, but it's full of potential. It's ready to be created. And sometimes we have to clear things out, and we have to clear out a space in order for things to come in. Old energy needs to be released, stale energy, in order for new experiences to come in. And that's the potential.
It's for beautiful.
New. So that's life, creation and destruction. So I think at this point,
I think it's a really good place to stop. Gee, this is actually been quite good talking through this with you. I think I get unconditional love much more, and staying in your power and being resilient. I hope you've all enjoyed this. I've enjoyed doing it.
Yeah, I don't know that we covered all our points,
yeah.
There's always another. We hope that there's another show. We're looking forward to it.
So we'll be back next week with probably a guest.
Maybe Alexandra, I hope, because we missed last week. Maybe Bob Doyleman Rose
or Errol Ford.
Yep.
So looking forward to next week, and goodbye from us.
Yep. We'll see you next time on Universal Soul Love.
Big hugs and big love.
Be kind to everyone. Bye.